It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. Back again, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. And remember, check us out on Facebook as well, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on Facebook. Like, you'll find FM Talk 106.5. That's our main Facebook page for the radio station. But Mike and I, we got our own Facebook page for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Love to get your pictures up there. Any kind of questions, you can always check out Captain Bobby Aprescato's Fishing Report. We put the podcast up there. Also, the podcast of this show, when we post it up later on this morning, will be linked up on the FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors Facebook page. Captain Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Sean. How you doing?
Doing good, man. And we are into spring now, not only on the calendar, but the way the weather feels.
It's perfect.
It is perfect.
You know, we got this 50 degrees in the morning and 70 in the middle of the day. I mean, that's pretty dadgum good.
Yep. And the and of course, with turkey season, it's been good news. I know this week, talking to folks, the turkeys started doing it a lot here towards maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They said they started actually seeing more hens on nest. And you and I can talk about, I think we saw one when you and I were hunting together. And there's here, they said, I think like Wednesday was better than Tuesday. Thursday was better than Wednesday, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's all site specific, too.
That's right. That's what I was going to say. Every place is different.
Now, high pressure helps, I think, turkeys gobble.
Yeah.
But, and let's say it's all, you say at least pressure, it's not all about pressure, but pressure is part of turkeys gobbling. In other words, barometric pressure, higher it is, usually, with some exception, usually more gobbling. When you have higher barometric pressure,
it seems like it.
Less gobbling, lower barometric pressure.
Seems like it.
Higher hunting pressure equals lower gobbling. Lower hunting pressure equals higher gobbling. So they're inverse. So the number one would be high barometric pressure leads to more gobbling. Low barometric pressure leads to less. On the other pressure side, high hunter pressure leads to lower gobbling. Lower hunter pressure leads to higher gobbling. There's our science lesson for the day.
And we hope we're right.
Yeah, we're something like that. Listen, the day you think you know what a turkey's doing is one of the main days that you are wrong.
Yeah. And tell me about your trip.
I want to talk about that and talk about you've been successful since last time we talked a couple times. Yeah, I do want to say this, and I said this to some folks this last week, and I'm going to pen a letter as well about this to send to the state. So I was drawn for one of the special opportunity areas, SOAs is the acronym, hunts. And they
That's
have them
a
for
state. State facilities.
Right.
State
and yeah, I want to run through that because this might be new to some people. And if you want to go online and go to outdooralabama.com and look for special opportunity areas or SOAs, and you get more information on there and get some maps and all that. But explain what happened here with these SOAs. So there were some pretty big management areas, public land tracts that were lost in the state over the last, let's say, 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Within the last 10 years, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of land.
Down in our area.
A lot.
Down in our area, yes. Some of the big ones like Boykin and Scotch.
Right.
These were big ones down here.
Yes.
But that same thing happened, people in east central Alabama. It happened up in north Alabama. They lost a bit, too. And they lost these kind of, you know, what you for having a regular public land tract that has, you know, has kind of open hunting as much as there's regulations on all of them, but open hunting, you know, being able to hunt multiple days and being able to hunt wherever you sit your tail down, you got that spot on public land. You need a pretty big tract of land, right? And we had some of these management areas in the past that were 20, 30,000 acres, 40,000 acres,
yes,
you know,
big ones.
And yeah, you had the land for enough people to spread out and go wherever. Problem is, state lost those, and to be frank with you, and I don't even have to, I'm guessing, you're in the business with Southern Timberlands of selling land. There's not a lot of 30 or 40,000 acre tracts for sale out there.
No.
It's like none.
None.
Right. So the state was in a quandary trying to replace places, and we down here, once again, it's like Boykin and Scotch are the ones down here, but those weren't the only ones lost. They lost big tracts like that up through the state and other places. So the state said, what are we going to do? You know, we've lost these public opportunity. Alabama already on the low side of public land access. And then we lost these big tracts. Well, what the state did is the next best thing, or I maybe would argue the best thing in a way. In a way, they found land that they could find tracts that were 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 acres.
Yeah.
And not only did they find those tracts that size, they found them in some of the best hunting areas in the state.
You're right.
Without a doubt.
Well, I'm in the middle of the Black Belt.
That's right. Let alone down here in our area, like the sanctuary, the Stimson Sanctuary has some limited hunts too for SOA, mostly mm-hmm. for kids and archery and all that. Up in the Black Belt, you've got Portland Landing. Portland Landing, y'all remember, if you watched Mossy Oak hunting videos in the 1980s like I did, the old VHS stuff,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they were doing their hunts. They were at Portland. That's the lease that Mossy Oak had.
Yeah.
That place. That's now part of the state's lands. Then there's Cedar Creek, just north of there.
That's where you went this weekend?
That's right. And they have Oochie Creek over in Russell County.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have Crow Creek. They have a bunch more throughout the state. So these special opportunity areas, the difference is they are public land, but they are lottery and limited access public land. While this is new, and I look on social media and see people ranting and raving about this on social media, that I can't believe the state has come up with this idea and is doing this. Y'all, they've been doing this. I've been hunting in the Mississippi and Mississippi Delta since 1990. Yeah. 91. We started duck hunting over there in the early 90s. This has been a deal in Mississippi for a long time. There's open public tracts like in our area, Upper Delta or Perdido, the W.O. Holland management. Those are open. You can go hunt. And they had those in Mississippi, but they also had smaller tracts there that were managed for a not a quantity, but a quality hunting experience.
Yeah.
The state of Alabama didn't do that for the longest time. They got kind of forced into it and did it now, and it's fantastic. Now, the SOAs, these special opportunity areas, are open for deer hunts. The ones in North Alabama, like Crow Creek and that, they have some duck hunts on them, and they're open for turkey hunts. And so you put in for a lottery, and I put in a couple times now, and I actually got drawn this year for turkey.
Yeah.
I put in for deer and turkey each year, and finally I got drawn for turkey. I got drawn for Cedar Creek. The way it works is I was one of, let's say, I think 9 or 10 groups on this property,
yeah.
And they took Cedar Creek. I'll tell you where I went because, I mean, it's once again, it's public land, but you have to get drawn. They take the property, and they divide it up into sections like you would a hunting camp.
Right.
I'm going to hunt number 3. I'm going to be over number 8. I'm going to be in 21, whatever it is. They divvied up the property that way into pretty big chunks, which is good for turkey hunting. And if you're drawn, you get a specific – when you put in the lottery, you put the days or the hunts you would be available, and for what species. And so if you're drawn, you get that area for a 3-day hunt. Yeah, we got there Thursday. I hunted Thursday, Friday. Scouted Thursday, hunted Friday, Saturday, Sunday is the hunt. And I hunted at Cedar Creek. Let me tell you, I heard – let's get to the meat of this, and then we'll kind of talk more about the mechanics of how all this works. It was for me, your results may vary. For me, it was the best goblin and turkey action. I killed turkeys, both seasons, but turkey hunting. I'm talking about striking birds, going to birds, hearing goblin, turkey activity. It's the best I've seen in 10 years. I'm talking about, I hunt private land.
Yeah.
What I was hunting on this special opportunity area with the state of Alabama, the turkey hunting, and the other areas around us were the same. It was the best turkey hunting I have been around in a decade.
Yeah.
And any Alabamian, you got our hunting license, you put in on the lottery, you get drawn, any of us can do it. It is fantastic. The property there, Dallas County, on the river, and then, the south of there, Portland Landing is north. I think that's Wilcox still down there, but it's right by it.
It's south of it, yeah.
It's North Wilcox on the river. These are two.
Just south of Selma.
These two are, like I said, Mossy Oak had Portland Landing leased for the longest time. Cedar Creek is incredible. Both of those places are fantastic property. I got to ride Portland Landing earlier this year when I went up to look at it, just to go look, and then got to hunt Cedar Creek. Those two properties, and I'm sure Uchi Creek over in Russell County is the same way. Y'all, they're fantastic. They are as good as, when I've gotten invited to go to some pretty high fancy hunting camps over the years, the land quality is as good or better than any of those places I've been on. The amount of game on Cedar Creek where I was is as good, no, sorry, better than any of the places I went. I talked to you. I got down to your place on Saturday night, and I told you, I mean, I, I've
You were fired up when you came down.
Well, I'm talking about having about turkeys, so many different turkeys gobbling. Some were on your area, some were not.
Yeah.
But it was enough turkey activity that you could, if this bird didn't do right, or when there, you could leave that bird, go to another one. If that one, go to another one. We were on gobbling turkeys on Cedar Creek until after lunchtime on Friday.
That's awesome.
Okay.
And that's really good. You don't have that on many places.
And it's public land, but it's public land with limited pressure. Now, happening this weekend, I'm not there, but there's another group of people. Actually, it's the mentored hunt going on there where they're taking adults and getting them into the outdoors. You know, we've just talked about getting kids in the outdoors for so long, and not to take away from that, but there's a gap missing where we got to get parents. I mean, if you take a kid on a mentored hunt and teach them hunt and the parents don't hunt, the chance of them going back, unless that mentor is right there in their community, are small.
You're right.
So the state realizes, like many other states, got to get some more adults involved in the outdoors, and they're doing that this weekend. But their hunts going on each week. But they rest the ground for four. Let's see, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, 4 days each week is rested, and then somebody gets to have the same experience I did going in that property. Hats off, Director Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife Keith Galden, all their crew have done an amazing job. Number one, these guys knew the properties that were good. They identified the properties where they were fantastic. And they've done the management to give everyday Alabamians, all of us, a chance to hunt some of the best hunting ground in the state. They are special opportunity areas. Look at them over at OutdoorAlabama.com. We'll talk more about that coming up. We'll also talk about my partner here, who's working the turkeys over here in the early season. I like it. All right, more when we return. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. And I get to spend, this last week has been a good one because I've gotten to spend more time with my friend Mike Ward than normal. Usually we do the show where you recount some stories, we talk on the phone, but I got to come hunt with you after I left Cedar Creek. And I got to tell you, it's a couple more things about that SOA hunt. One of the reasons I left to come down to your place Saturday is to come visit for exact reason. Now, I love you, man, but it's also the fact you got a bunch of turkeys. I mean, if I would have probably come down to your place and stayed with you and run back up and hunted if you didn't, but it was good that we got to hunt together and spend together.
Well, we don't get a chance to do a lot of that. I mean, you think we do stuff together all the time, but we just don't. Rare. We go in different directions a lot. We get to fish maybe once, twice a year, and hunt maybe once, twice a year together. That's really about it. Yeah.
And so it was good. I want to kind of finish up here when I was talking about where I was staying too. I would suggest if you are drawn for one of the two SOAs that we just mentioned, that would be Portland Landing or Cedar Creek.
Yeah.
Those two. I mean, if you may be lucky, have somewhere to stay up there. Where I stayed was Roland Cooper State Park.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd been there, but gosh, it's been so long ago since I'd been there. What a great place.
Yeah.
You know, and this is another part of state lands. It's not directly connected to Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. But I want to point out, and when I get the pictures posted up, and hopefully I have them posted up soon on the Facebook page, I kind of felt, you know, really cool too because it was such an Alabama weekend. I'm enjoying this great, great property to hunt, state land property. And at the same time, I'm staying in a state park. And I enjoy that vibe. Yeah, it was really cool. So, and also, if you're looking at Roland Cooper State Park, if you do get drawn for, you know, if you're deer hunting or if you're turkey hunting on one of those two SOAs, because they're close to it. Number one, it's a good place to stay, and there's a variety of places to stay. You can stay. They have the full cabins that have – heck, I saw a road by one to look. They got satellite dish on them, too. I mean, they've got power, water.
That's where I'm
staying.
Right.
A view there of the Alabama River, and actually where I stayed, it was a beautiful view as well. But those are like everything normal, like your house cabins. They've got those. They also, because a lot of people think, okay, Roland Cooper State Park, a lot of people take their RVs up there and campers. They sure do, but that's not the only show in town. They've got cabins for you there. They also have a ton of tent camping that goes on there. And during turkey season, what a great option. And that saves a lot of money every night. And I did something in between, the hybrid, because I wanted to see what it was about. And they had, they said primitive cabins. Now, these are, I know they're called tiny houses because I have a daughter who loves talking about tiny houses. As I tell her, I said, then I've done too good of a job as a dad because there's a lot of kids that don't want to go in a tiny house growing up. They want to get a big house. I said, you obviously had too much house growing up. You want a tiny house. But so I stayed in, they are, you know, pretty small, you know, 100, 150 square feet cabins. They don't have power and water, but you can plug a generator into a box there and give the put the fan on and some things. And but they've got a futon, a folding futon on one side, and then a futon with a bunk bed on the other. It's really, and it's right there on the Alabama. It's got a fire pit out front that you know has the grill like a park grill.
Right.
Grilled
mm-hmm.
steak one night there and had a, you know, great fires each evening. Great place to stay. It takes me about up to Cedar Creek, maybe 15 to 20 minutes to leave the park to get there to go where we're hunting. Portland Landing would be closer even to there. So if you're putting in for these SOAs, you're lucky enough to get drawn. Think about Roland Cooper State Park. Great place to stay. Plus, if I would have had more time, you know, if I'd have just stroked a turkey the first thing on Friday morning, I'd have been wanting my boat because it's sitting right there on the Alabama, and I wanted a white perch fish, crappie fish, and I saw the bass that were coming in. Number one, they had a little tournament thing. I saw them, and I saw people, you know, keeping bass to eat. Some chunks.
Oh, they catch some good ones out of Miller's
Ferry. And I saw some spots, too, nice spots.
They have figured out the spots up at Miller's Ferry now.
If y'all don't know, I got a thing, and so does Mike, about spotted bass. Yes. We like spotted bass.
Oh, we love them, yeah. Man, they catch some big ones up there. I'm talking about 4 and 5 pound spots. Some whoppers up there.
And a 4 or 5 pound spot thinks they're about 15 pounds. The ones I saw the guys cleaning on spots were probably... They were footballs. I mean, they were 2.5.
Yeah.
I mean, they were good, and they had, you know, had a table full. So that's just an aside there. But Roland Cooper State Park, great place to stay. And I just want to come back and circle back and say hats off to the whole crew, because it takes a lot of people to make that work, because they had to think outside the box a little bit. And there are a lot of people that – and I understand it. I can be like that on things too. Something's different. Something's changed. You don't like it. Let me tell you, you need to see what this is all about. You need to put in for the lotteries. There's no way to have tracks the size – and it's funny hearing myself say this because I just know this sounds funny to me. It sounds funny to you. To have smaller tracks like 7,000 acres have full access. I get it. I'm right. I'm with you. 7,000 acres is a ton of ground. But not to have – it's not the 30 and 40,000 acre tracks of old. And so what the state's doing is they're giving you a quality – I mean, you had a private hunting club hunting experience is what I had. It was my buddy and I on a whole two sections there. Not sections like 640s, but two areas of Cedar Creek. And I mean, we could move on turkeys. We could travel to turkeys. It was all us for the 3 days. Y'all, it was a – if you're not putting in for these SOAs, you're missing – and the deer stuff, I'm shooting myself in the foot because I'm putting in again for deer up there. But they had some of the racks and comparison racks and stuff up there at the site. There's a sign-out board and everything there. There's some – it's Dallas County. There's some bucks in that joker. Yeah. And I cut tracks. I saw a couple different days deer off turkey hunting that I saw does that were 130 pounds.
Yeah.
Solid
big
130
does.
Pounds.
Yeah.
And I saw buck tracks that were, I mean, you know, the size of a cell phone in that buck print. That size, I mean, big tracks, big deer.
Now, could you have killed one turkey a day? Or
no.
Here's
the rule. So
turkey.
The rules, you and your guests each get one.
Okay.
Okay, and if you go through the rules, if like you and I hunted day one and we both killed a turkey, nobody goes back. I can't take another guest. You know, basically it's two turkey per hunt. The hunter gets to kill one, and their guest gets to kill one. But once a guest kills one, you can't bring another guest. So it's two turkeys max.
Yeah.
And let me tell you this too. I didn't even get into the grizzly details, and I want to get into yours. But I had the safety off 3 different times on the hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a day one. If it would have been for a hen, you know, off my boot, I'd had a strutter killed Friday morning at about 9:30, 10 o'clock. I had fantastic hunts. Got close to birds. I had goblin birds, hundreds of gobbles on that place, multiple gobblers throughout the morning, throughout. So I had called Jake's up to my boot, you know. I was just in turkeys the whole time. And the same thing was true in the other areas that, you know, the different segmented areas of Cedar Creek. And I heard, because there are people camping next to us at Roland Cooper, said the same thing for Portland Landing.
Yeah.
Just a lot of birds. So I would say if you want to give yourself a top shelf, you know, it's not a guy like me, I don't get to hunt black belt property very often. That kind of experience, you need to check out the SOAs. And hats off to everybody at the state. Y'all did fantastic.
Chuck Syke has done a tremendous job.
And you're talking about somebody who knows
everything.
We have moved light years ahead. I'll leave it there right now. We'll pick that back up at a further discussion. But we've moved light years ahead with the crew we have in there. All right. And you and I got together Saturday. You had a good hunt Saturday morning.
Had a great hunt. And it's amazing. We're talking about the amount of gobbling from one day to the next. You know, you're talking about the humidity getting a little more one day. And Saturday, I heard so many turkeys gobble, Sean. It was just like unbelievable. I told you when you got there, man, we're going to have a fantastic hunt Sunday. Because Saturday, I mean, when I tell you that I heard 15 turkeys gobble, that's a minimum of what I heard. I mean, I could have heard 20. I could have heard more. I don't know how many I heard because they were everywhere. I went to one that was gobbling right off the bat, so I went straight to him and got pretty close to him, and a couple more started gobbling close to him, so I got in there as close as I could, and then there was turkeys started gobbling everywhere. I had them surrounded. I was surrounded by turkeys gobbling, and as far as I could hear, there was turkeys gobbling. It's unbelievable. So, I set up basically in the middle of them, and about 8:15, here comes one, I hear a
But he didn't gobble coming in, did he?
No, he did not gobble coming in. And about that time, they'd kind of shut up a little bit. They started quietening down, not gobbling as much about 8:15. And anyway, I kept heard it two or three times, him drumming, and I knew where it was coming from, but I couldn't see him. Then all of a sudden, I saw him. And then he was about 2 o'clock on me. And then he started walking sort of behind me, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and got directly behind me. And while he was walking, I heard another. So he's walking.
They're coming by Mike in waves, y'all.
Yeah, and I'm hearing another one drum, and I'm looking for the other one because he might be closer or whatever. But I never saw him. But that turkey got directly behind me, and I had to get on my knees, turn around, when he got behind the tree, and finally, I ended up shooting him. And the other part of the story is that I'm shooting my grandson's 20-gauge
right.
with a TSS.
You're shooting the number nines.
A number nine TSS tungsten shot.
Super shot, yep.
Yep. And I shot him at exactly 50 steps, and he flopped about 3 or 4 times and died.
20-gauge, y'all.
20-gauge, okay. And I want to tell you what, that gun is awesome. I got a little red dot scope on it, a little bitty thing, about the size of a quarter. Man, it is just awesome out there. So here comes Sunday. Me and you come spend the night with me. Mm-hmm. And we get up Sunday morning. I'm so excited about it because I'm
pretty fired
you,
up too. Yeah,
I'm telling you all the turkeys I heard. And I said, man, we're going to get, I know where to get. We're going to get in the middle of them. And we're going to have some fun, man.
Yep.
No guarantees we're going to kill one, but we're
going to be in them. Yeah.
So we get in there and get set up just perfect, me and you. And this turkey gobbles right at daylight. And you're saying, he's over there. We ought to go that way. I said, no, we'll stay right here.
Right. Now, that was interesting. I mean, if somebody could have followed us with the camera that morning, it was interesting the different turkey style, the hunts, Because you know your land. So I go, well, I'm going to hunt the way I had my initial reaction. Kind of where I am, I got to close the distance before somebody from the other property, kind of where down where I hunt, gets over on that bird. I'm going to close the distance, get close, and be the closest hen to them. But you know better on your place.
Well, I thought I did.
Usually you'll bump at your place. You have so many turkeys, you'll bump a turkey going to that turkey.
Right,
right.
And I knew I was in the middle of where all of them were the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm expecting at least 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. To go off right by, close to us so that we only have to go 100 yards or so to get in close to one or something. Well, we sit there, and that turkey gobbles again. You say, man, might ought to go down there to him. I said, just hang on now. Hang on. They're going to get going right
here. Can y'all picture this, Mike? I'm sitting there, I'm like, hey, you want to go that turkey? Because that turkey, that's fired up turkey. Let's go that turkey.
And then,
that's the truth right there, y'all.
And then after he gobbles about 6 or 8 times, I guess, I said, Sean, I guess we ought to go to that turkey. So anyway, we get around there and we get set up, and there was several turkeys gobbling over there when we got set up and everything. And they just never really. I went as far as I thought we needed to go, and we probably needed to go a little bit further. But I was afraid we was going to spook them. We got a lot of turkeys on there, and I've just learned over the years, don't spook them. You don't have to, because if that turkey don't come, there's more around it. Subjects come to you.
That's right.
So anyway, we heard those gobble, and we never did do any good. And about, I don't know what time it was, 8:30 or so, that turkey exactly where we were standing earlier that morning, one gobbles, and then there's another one gobbled back behind him. And anyway, we went to those turkeys and didn't do any good, and set up and just yipped and everything.
Well, I want to add something though, that as I was getting the reports this last week, friends of mine said that goblins picked up. They saw hens moving away. You and I, As we're slipping through the woods, we saw a hen that's most likely on nest as well.
Right.
So that's already started. That's a good thing. That's going to be a good thing.
She didn't fly. She didn't do anything.
No, right.
She saw us.
And does the old, follow me slowly over here. You know, when you see that, she's trying to lead you away from the nest.
That's right.
So that's a good sign. So then, listen, y'all, so we set up with it, and then because I was lucky enough to get drawn on this SOA hunt, and I had been gone since Thursday.
Yeah.
Thursday.
Unusual for you.
Right. I don't get to be, and I've got, eight and a 13-year-old at the house, and the missus and all that stuff. And I said, it's probably need to get home about noon. I packed up and headed south back to Mobile. I hadn't gotten settled in the house before Mike sends me a picture, and he went right back out and killed one.
Well, what happened after you left, I got thinking, do I want to go fishing or do I want to go try to hunt? And the bull gnats are starting to come out. And
that's true.
You know, if I go over there on that lake, the gnats are bad over there, too. I said, I'm just going to go hunt for a couple of hours, and I'm going to go home. So a couple of days before that, I had ridden by this place where a lot of turkeys scratching up under some big oak trees. So on a road. And I said, I'm just going to go set up over there because they're scratching a lot. Surely they're going to come in. So anyway, I go set up over there, and I yep a little bit, and honestly, I fell asleep. And I heard something while
Mike would be a lot more still. He's a lot more still than I am turkey hunting because he's asleep half the time. But.
Shh. Anyway, I hear this. I said, oh, God, what is it? I'm alert now,
right.
know. And I can see about 75 yards down the road, and I hear. I don't see anything. And here comes a hen, and then here comes another hen, here comes another hen, and I still don't see the gobbler, but he's back there. I'm hearing him at least 100 yards away.
Right.
And he woke me up drumming.
Woke
me up drumming, so I can hear a drum pretty good.
Longer than anybody I know, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so here he comes, and I didn't call him up. They were just coming through. He was coming down that road strutting and following those hens, and those hens were going to, I'm sure, go get up under those oak trees and scratch some and everything. Anyway, he comes up 43 steps, and I shot him with that TSS 20 gauge, and it was like I took a sledgehammer out there and knocked him in the head, John.
Dish-ragged him.
I mean, he didn't wiggle his toe. That 20 gauge with that TSS is awesome, man. That's what I'm getting ready to start shooting.
Oh, yeah, that's...
grandson ain't with me, that's what I'm shooting. But when I'm getting ready to get me one of those guns, I got a Weatherby automatic youth model. Short stock, short barrel, 24-inch barrel.
Yep.
I can hold it in one hand and shoot it. It is awesome.
Makes a huge difference, which, by the way, since we hunted... Because I've put the pictures up. If you're on Instagram, you can go see. I've posted some pictures up testing different shotguns this year with TSS before season. I got a 410 set up for my daughter. And things are killer. 30 yards, it's turkey killing machine.
Absolutely.
I mean, I not only patterned it, watched the shot carry on out across the road and over our lake, shooting it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a heck of a gun. I got our single shot 410 for turkey hunting. Then I've been, wanting to just kind of defaulted to my 12, and I've put some of the targets you'll see on Instagram. I'm shooting my 12 Remington 1187, shooting TSS 12 gauge number 9s. These are all 3-inch. I don't have any 3.5-inch.
Yeah.
And pattern's fantastic, carries. And I've been looking and been trying to find a 20. Well, since I saw you last, I got the 20. Got it set up this week.
Okay, good.
So I've got a light carry pump 20 for the same thing. And the TSS is amazing. There's a lot of people that'll say, well, you can shoot it down to 80 or 90 yards. Well, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. To me, at a certain point, you lose turkey hunting if you're shooting them at distance.
Yeah.
But when they hang up at 45, they hang up at 45, 50 yards, that happens to a lot of people, especially you pasture hunt like I do.
Yeah.
Happens to a lot of folks. And you can definitely do something about that with that TSS. And also, just like you're saying, and I've done, you can go down and not have to carry. I don't have to carry a 9.5-pound 1187.
That's right.
And I don't have to try to hold it up the whole time. I mean, it's amazing. I go to a 20. It's a lot lighter carrying gun, and I have a gun that can kill them all day long.
That's right. That TSS number 9 shot is supposed to be the same weight as a number five lead.
That's right.
So when you think about a number five, how big the shot is to a number nine, which is little tiny, and it's the same weight, look how many more number nines you can put in a shell versus a number five.
Absolutely.
I can tell you right now, 60 yards, that 20 gauge, I wouldn't have no problem.
It's some strong medicine, for sure, right there on turkey. So, yeah, we'll talk more about the TSS, and you've now killed two with them. I'm shooting it. This is my first year shooting it, and hopefully maybe tomorrow morning I kill one with it. So we'll give you more reports on that. Coming back, Captain Wayne Miller's not going to wait for us anymore. We're talking bass fishing next. Y'all stay close. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Switch gears here, leave the turkeys alone for a second, and go pick on the bass. And when we do that, we check in with Captain Wayne Miller. Hey, Captain Wayne.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. We're doing good. And looking at some of the pictures that are hitting my phone right now and on our Facebook page, you've never been off the bass this year, actually, but you continue to be on some toads, too, now.
Yeah, you know, it's really, you know, I mean, a lot of people have the impression that, man, we just had terrible high water, and indeed we have this spring so far. But the good news is, man, there's been some really tremendous, action down on the lower end of the Delta, you know, along the causeway and some of the creeks as far up as, you know, 12 Mile Island. So you're still talking about an amazing amount of water down there that's accessible to fish.
That's one of the great things, many great things about living here. But for a bass fisherman, you can fish marsh, you can fish, you know, broken marsh, you can fish bottomland hardwoods, and depending on the conditions, you know, where a lot of people, if you live north of here on the river, you're just shut down. But here, you switch gears, you go to the causeway.
And the other good thing is I saw pictures of other than bass you caught.
I tell you, Mike, it's amazing. You know, I had some customers last week and caught some beautiful redfish up in the creek. I was laughing talking to Sean not long ago about these redfish, and they're just prolific eating machines.
and they don't get run out.
I don't know what else to say about them, and they will follow bait anyway.
Now, that's the thing, because if people would think, man, the water's been so high, so much fresh water, any kind of brackish water fish or saltwater fish is out of there. But redfish are still in there. They don't care.
Yeah. I mean, and we've actually even caught some flounder, I always, you know, every spring catch quite a few flounder on, I know Sean's going to laugh at this, my favorite bait to throw, a watermelon chartreuse tail lizard. But, man, the flounder just loves that thing.
I'm going to be out the lighthouse throwing that soon, trying to catch flounder down there out of Dolphin Island. Well, let's talk about the conditions out there, and then I want to get into some of the patterns. But we have seen anything would be a fall from where the rivers have been. They have fallen, and Barry steam plant reading down in the sixes. But you're saying that's not the whole story. Look at, you know, you've got the Mobile River comes out of not only Tom Bigby, but the Alabama.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's all interconnected, and there's been some, you know, I've had some people call me this past week, and, you know, they're really kind of confused because now the Mobile's actually dropped a little below 5 feet, but we still have some high water in the middle and upper Delta Lake, and that water hadn't cleaned up. And typically when you see those water levels on the Barry reading drop down to five, you know, everything starts clearing up. I mean, it looks really great. And that process is extremely slow right now. And what people have to understand is we just came through what was, you know, pretty historic flooding. We hadn't seen that kind of water since 1990. So even today, we still have the Alabama, the Claiborne reading at over 20 feet. So, you know, we've still got a lot of water in that whole process that we normally go through every spring related to this particular event. It's just a really, really slow process from the standpoint of the level and the clarity of the water. So, you know, and right now some of the lakes in the middle are cleaning up, but, you know, it's kind of hit and miss. You know, I tell people that have been calling me and asking me, you know, you really have to just run in there and look at the water, because there again, all that is also influenced by the tide.
Sure.
So, you know, it's a challenging time of year, but the great thing is, man, I mean, the water temperatures have come up. We got fish in the shallow water. They're there for one reason, to do their thing, buddy. They're spawning, and, you know, they're accessible. And as you see by those pictures, man, we have really been catching them good.
Absolutely.
So if the water continues to drop like it is, I guess, can you go as far as Miffin right now and fish?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, right now, I mean, there's some fish being caught up there, but... But, you know, when you've got that level on that Alabama, Mike,
yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you remember this, you know, then you bump on up above that and you think, well, Mifflin's good, so Tensaw ought to be good. Well, you know, not so much.
Right.
And but every day changes a little bit, and there's going to be, you know, specific times when you'll have areas of these big lakes like that that'll start, you know, the water will drop to that magic level, and all of a sudden, you got black water coming out of the woods.
Yeah. So and, if the water continues to drop like it is, when do you think you'd be able to go up and fish Bates's and the Alabama River and Tom Bigby up, you know, up there, if it continues like it is?
You know, it's probably going to be, you know, a couple of weeks out.
Okay, right? That far out. Because, okay.
Yeah, because the Tom Bigby's still up high.
Yeah,
I mean, we're still got a real significant, you know, level on the at Coffeyville. So, you know, like I say, we just had so much water. This entire process has really slowed tremendously versus what we typically see. Because, as y'all both know, usually what we see once that rain stops, you know, we'll see those extremely high levels, and then they will fall like a banshee.
Yes,
you know. And, you know, they really fall out fast. And, you know, I mean, typically you see when the Mobile, the berry reading is up around 10 to 12 feet, usually you don't see it fall just gradually like it has. I mean, it usually falls pretty fast, but it's been a real slow, gradual process this time.
Well, what's happened, too, is we were just so saturated with water that the ground couldn't suck it up anymore, and it was just every bit of the rain we got was running off. The ground couldn't really hold it anymore. Well, the good news is all the trees are starting to put on mm-hmm. leaves now, and it is sucking the water out of the ground. So if it rains again, at least we'll have the ground will soak up some of it. It won't be 100% runoff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this things are going to get better.
Everything is going in the right direction, and from the standpoint of, you know, Sean, you talked about patterns right now. You know, obviously it's all spring, you know, both pre-spawn patterns and spawning fish. But, you know, I've been catching just tremendous numbers on the spinnerbaits. You know, I throw a lot of the, you know, Keith Lott with Lott Lures makes, you know, that little Tweety spinnerbait.
Yep.
I've sent you some pictures of those, and man, I have just been absolutely wrecking them on that spinnerbait.
Yeah.
And my standard watermelon chartreuse lizard, it really gets goofy every year in the spring with that thing, because, man, they just, you know, they eat it. They love it.
Keith Lott is a local guy that makes lures. And he makes great spinner baits.
And he makes the stuff that works here.
That's right. And where can you get those at?
You know, they've got them at Quince, and most of the local tackle stores,
okay.
you know, are carrying them now.
Okay,
so,
good.
You know, Keith, they got him hopping this time of year, buddy. I mean, he's working full time trying to keep them stocked up. But you know, one thing, you know, I would mention to everybody, you know, this time of year, you know, there's always a question about, well, you know, should I throw a white spinnerbait, a white chartreuse, mm-hmm, or a mm-hmm. chartreuse? And a lot of that is dependent on the water clarity. And there's so much difference between all the creeks right now. You know, I encourage people just to, you know, keep, you know, you know, keep a white chartreuse, just a solid chartreuse, and even, you know, try variations on the colors of your blade.
Well, okay, we got a couple minutes left. I'd like to, you and Mike both, is there like a rule of thumb, though, somebody listening today, is it just check them all out? Or if I said, okay, the water is muddy, the water is stained, the water is half stained, the water is clear, what you would go to first, second, third?
Yeah. You know, I mean, for clear water, you know, I typically go with a lighter bait, a quarter ounce, and I like a white and chartreuse. You know, for once you start getting into the stained water, you know, I look at, you know, the possibility of going with like the old bush hog type bait. And Keith makes a line of those too. And, you know, you start looking at like chartreuse blade and white blade. And then the muddy, obviously, you know, you go to the, you know, the stronger colors, you know, the solid chartreuse, the red. And, you know, that's, but, you know, there can always be a combination of those that works better. And that's one reason, especially if you've got two guys in a boat, don't ever throw the same thing until you really lock down on a pattern.
That's
you
right.
Know, you should try different things. And it's amazing, you know, you can expedite that process of determining what's the best bait to throw on that particular day for that water.
Mike, are you going to get the same
thing? Yeah, I'm in agreement with him. You know, one of my favorite is a bush hog with chartreuse blades and a black body with a white double tail twister. Now, that was really, or a purple skirt with a white double tail.
And Bruiser.
Purple, solid purple.
Purple, yeah.
And with a double tail white twister with chartreuse blades. Those were my two favorite baits. Now, of course, I had the whites and the chartreuses and all that.
Yeah.
But I use copper blades a lot. I use chartreuse blades more, and then when I didn't use chartreuse, I used copper. Usually double spin Colorado.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's amazing, Mike, because, you know, I know you're aware of this, but you know, over the years, I've fished with a lot of different people, and even with when we analyze a particular watercolor, if I've got a guy that's real proficient with spinnerbait, you know, he may pull out something totally different from me, but man, if he's got that confidence in it,
there you go,
buddy.
That's what I forgot to tell you. It's a lot of that is about confidence, and
it's about the angler, not the fish.
I had caught so many fish on that black with a white double tail and the purple with the white double tail twister with the chartreuse blades. That I just had confidence in it, and I used that all the time.
All right, listen, we're going to have to run to the break. But listen, next week we should talk about the next part of this. Fishing those baits, fishing on the south end. But slowly but surely, that water, that black water, start falling out of the woods, and we'll be doing a little different kind of fishing, right, Captain Wayne, up the river?
Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, and I'm looking forward to that just like everybody else is. But, you know, like I say, the great news is, man, we're just blessed with a fishery that allows us, even with tough conditions, to still go out there and catch fish.
All right. Speaking of catching fish, let people know how they get a trip booked with you.
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
All right. Good stuff. We appreciate it. We'll let you get back to catching and talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Have a great one.
You too. Captain Wayne Miller checking in. And we're coming right back to wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, we about ran out of time on this thing. All right, well, we will be back to do it next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Hopefully y'all get out. And we didn't even mention speckled trout fishing. Talked to Captain Bobby on Thursday.
I heard that.
And he said it's not fishing right now, it's catching. Spring pattern, you're drifting shallow water over oyster shells, over grass. You're looking at, in that drifting fishing, you're drifting, you're working popping corks with live shrimp or a voodoo or a DOA. And the key there, I will say this, to get your numbers up, and we talked about it on Thursday a little bit, if it needs to be an anchor, okay, but, you know, there's so many stick it pole. It's nice to have the power pole and all that, but if you don't, like me, I got a stick it pole, which is a manual one of those poles already tied off.
Cajun poles, one of those Cajun spears.
Somebody gets bit, court goes down, they got a trout on. Stop that boat. The school's going to be in there. Fish them till they move. Drift, find them again, and fish them till they move. All right.
That's right.
We got to get out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next. Remember, check us out. Yes, check us out online. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on Facebook.